Good morning. It's 9:59. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned at 11 for the bike show today, bringing you stories of three women who are creating community and inclusion in cycling. That's coming up here at KBOO. We have a couple of announcements, and we'll listen to those before we go to the show. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO this morning.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet Thursday, May 4th at 5 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of WagonCon 2017. WagonCon takes place May 5th, 6th, and 7th at the Dalles Civic Auditorium. WagonCon features 2.5 days of role-playing games, board games, miniature war games, and collectible card games. There will be special guests, workshops, demos, and more. Again, that's WagonCon 2017. WagonCon takes place May 5th, 6th, and 7th at the Dalles Civic Auditorium at the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area, 323 East 4th Street in the Dalles. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Did you know that everything you hear on KBOO Radio is now archived on the KBOO website? Music, news, public affairs, it's all there for you to listen on demand. And podcast. Look up your favorite KBOO shows by name on iTunes or your favorite podcasting software. You can listen when you want, share a link to a program you heard on the radio, and go to our website, kboo.fm, and click on audio. All the audio is there, and playlists for music shows are shown along with the audio recording, so you can follow along to find out the artists and titles of the songs that you hear. Again, it's all right there on kboo.fm, on iTunes, or the KBOO app.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from City Bikes, a worker-owned, cooperatively-run new and used bicycle sales and service shop with two locations on Southeast Ankeny near KBOO. Open 7 days a week for your bicycle commuting needs and online at citybikes.coop. Also by The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW.
Good morning. You're tuned into The Bike Show, broadcasting live from the KBOO studios in Southeast Portland, Oregon. I'm Tori Bortman, here joined today after a long hiatus by my co-host Alon Robb. Good morning, Alon, and welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Good, thank you.
Good. Today we're thrilled to be joined by three women who are creating the worlds they want to live in by making community and exploring new perspectives. In the second half of our show, we'll be joined by Molly Sugar and Gretchel Falzgen, the founders of the new Portland cycling group Friends on Bikes, whose goals include wanting to ensure that women of color have a safe, supportive, and fun cycling community that they belong to and bring more exposure to women of color who aren't being heard in the cycling community. But first, we're joined by Laura Everett. She is a United Church of Christ minister who lives, works, and rides a bike in Boston and is the author of the just-published book, Holy Spokes, The Search for Urban Spirituality on Two Wheels, published by Erdmann's Publishing Company. She, in her own words, is a dedicated urbanist and also serves as the executive director of the Massachusetts Council of Churches and is also a bike advocate. Activist. Good morning, Laura Everett. Welcome to the KBOO Bike Show.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on today. I want to start off by asking you to tell us a little bit more about your book and what it means and how it relates to being a dedicated urbanist.
Well, I gave up my car and started riding my bicycle as my primary form of transit about 8 years ago now. And I think in any spiritual tradition, what we do daily forms us. But I didn't hear anyone talking about how our practices of commuting shape our bodies, shape our minds, and mostly shape our spirits. So I knew that bicycle riding daily was changing me, and I wanted to think theologically about this. I was hoping that I could speak in a way that sort of traditionally religious people might be able to see the deep spiritual practices of cyclists, and that cyclists would be able to recognize that what we do daily shapes our spirits. And I was also feeling a little frustrated because so much spiritual writing about finding the transcendent, finding peace and wisdom seems to take place in the mountains, in the fields, out in the wilderness, but nobody was asking about where we find what is transcendent in a city.
And there's
where Holy Spokes comes from.
And that's also where most people are living these days.
That's right. I think cities shape us. I think they shape us in ways that are really different than other places, and wanted to try to articulate the ways that what religious traditions would call spiritual practices are intentionally urban spiritual practices. So things like, what does silence and rest look like when you live in a city that is constantly in motion?
And you write in your book, moving through Boston by bike has shown me that the city is a sort of scripture, a holy text to read and reread, to study and memorize, to grieve, to celebrate, and finally to make sense of the world. Can you elaborate a little bit about this sort of scripture?
And maybe how it relates to what you were just talking about.
Yeah. Well, I think cyclists, in my experience, are orthopraxis, right? Our practice is what binds us together. We may believe different things, think different things, but we share a common practice, and that practice is riding our bicycle. And I know for me, riding in my city has embedded the map of the city into my mind in ways that driving or walking never quite did. I have a sense of these roads that is so thoroughly different than when I was moving primarily by car. And I think to adopt a place, to be dedicated to a place, is to treat it as sacred. And so these roads for me, these neighborhoods, these people that I see by bicycle, have become a kind of scripture to meditate on, to dig underneath, to interrogate and ask questions of, to believe that it's all sacred and that the city can teach me about who I am, who my neighbors are, and maybe even who God is.
That's such a fascinating practice, because I think we're so busy in this world and it's moving so fast. And a lot of times I think we're just on our bikes, moving through it and kind of passively interacting with it. I mean, we're a little more active on a bike, but still I ride this route a million times a day. So there's something really fascinating about what you're saying, is really basically being a little more mindful and paying attention.
Right. And I think there is, there's something particular about our daily routes that are familiar enough to us that, you know, we know the timing of the next flight. We know what four-way scramble is coming up in front of us. We know how long it will take. And that familiarity, I think, can allow some of the scattered thoughts in our heads to settle down a little more and notice what's bubbling up for us. You know, on my commute into my office this morning, I saw another building that's being demolished. I've learned to pay attention to my neighborhood because I am so present to it by my bicycle.
And do you feel that riding a bicycle is more of an individual practice or communal?
Mm. Well, nobody else is going to pedal it for you, right? I think there's a deep spiritual truth that cyclists know, that we are not solely responsible for our own safety and well-being. We are dependent upon the attentiveness and the carefulness and the compassion of others. In Boston, our advocacy group, the Boston Cyclists Union, says that we have safety in numbers. We're a little behind you all in building the infrastructure up to meet that, but I have a sense that my riding, my body in public space invites other people to that, and I'm dependent upon other cyclists as well.
And where do motorists, you mentioned in the book sometimes hostile motorists and how they challenge you to be nonviolent. How do you deal with that? How are you finding the strength to be compassionate when somebody just almost ran into you because they were looking at their
cell phone, little electronic toy? As I saw on the way in this morning.
Oh, gosh. I know. And I, look, I am not a perfectly spiritually mature cyclist. I yell, too. But that's also a confirmation that I believe that my life is worthy, that the people around me are precious and sacred, and that those phones can wait. I think it raises some real questions, right? Like one of the things I ask in the book is what is a spiritually mature response to negligence? I don't always think it's malice. I don't think most drivers are out to try to kill me, but I do think how we deal with other people's anger, how we deal with negligence in ways that might threaten our very lives, is a real question for cyclists.
Absolutely. I think it's a question we deal with every single day. I mean, part of my new practice, this is one of the things that I am practicing this year, because I kind of pick different goals every year to work on, is I tend to definitely be reactive. I'm going to react no matter what. That's just my personality. So what I try to do is react with crazy positive enthusiasm. So if somebody, especially the more angry they are at me, the more I smile and wave. So they're either going to think A, I'm crazy and give me some room, or B, they can't be like, well, she somehow instigated me. No, I was smiling and waving. There's nothing you can say to that except there I am. And so for me, it gives me a way to output that energy without actually reacting in the way I would love to, which is with some other hand gestures.
Yep. I think that doing to others is a real question. I also believe in proportional responsibility, right? I, on a bike, can do real damage to a pedestrian, and I expect people who are driving cars to be overly cautious of me. Now, I know that's not always true, but yeah, I think these strategies for how do we deal with other people's anger, other people's negligence, I've been trying lately to introduce myself, if I've got the time to do it. Say, hi, I'm Pastor Laura. I'm a human. I'm not some inconvenience in somebody else's way. And in the same way, I want to try to have that compassion and think, oh gosh, is that driver, on his third shift and he's rushing to get to a place and he's being paid insufficiently just wages, how do I find compassion for other people because it's a hostile environment, and that driver didn't create it any more than I did. But how we behave in a hostile environment is, I think, part of the spiritual discipline of living in a city.
And this question of how to deal with angry people, how to protect our environment, I mean, that's something that's with us all the time, but cycling, we're more aware of it because it's so immediate. But you know, the climate catastrophe, wars, all the inequality, economic inequality, those exist also every time we step out of the house or even in our house sometimes. So cycling maybe forces us to be aware of it quite often, along with the joy of being alive.
That's right. Yeah. I think we're all vulnerable people who are dependent upon the actions of others. I think cyclists have an embodied sense of that, that we know that we are fragile humans and we're only here for a little while. That's true in a car, that's true on a bus, that's true on a train as well. But cyclists know it because we don't have these giant metal containers around us. Mm. And so that embodiment of our human frailty and the utter delight in getting to move freely with other people under our own power, I think there's something utterly transcendent about a cool summer night when you get to ride home and the world just seems perfectly aligned with you and your bicycle.
You describe in your book some unexpected gifts that the bicycle gives you, like stronger legs, dearer neighbors, more creative curse words, and a practice of the presence of God. How did these all come about? How did you start kind of realizing them? And are there any other unexpected gifts that you've found? Because that kind of sounds like that is one.
Yeah. Well, I think as a pastor, I'm someone who's trained to notice things like this. And I didn't start riding a bicycle to find God or strengthen my prayer life or become a better Christian. I started riding my bicycle because I'm cheap and my car died and I was recently out of grad school and didn't have enough money to replace it. And I don't think most folks talk about the spiritual or meditative effects of cycling. We hear about that in running, maybe in swimming or in yoga, but nobody was really asking that about bicycles. And so I feel like I've learned both a sense of my own agency and a sense of my own limitations. That's absolutely a spiritual truth. I think I've developed a different sense of what's work and what's rest.
Interesting. And how does that relate to your writing?
Oh, it's a great question. Thank you. My legs tell me when I've gone further than I'm used to. I know that there are limits to how far I can go. I'm not a huge roadie. I mostly ride as transit, but I know that I have limits.
Absolutely. Or if you're sick, or you're not feeling well.
Right.
Or you did a big hike the weekend before.
Yeah. Right. When it's 90 degrees, you know, I think learning that we are humans that are finite and glorious and capable and I think especially as a woman, learning about the agency in my own body, that was really important for me. I didn't grow up thinking I was super sporty, and so riding a bicycle has really changed my relationship to my body.
Do you feel like it doesn't sound like you'd still now describe yourself as super sporty, but yeah, your relationship to your body maybe has changed. Do you think your capacity for what you think you could potentially be capable of physically has changed?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, the way you know how many layers you need to wear at 42 degrees, I also know, all right, can I catch that guy? I know what my legs can do the first thing in the morning, and I know what they can do in me late at night after a long day. I have a much clearer sense of the capacity of my own body now.
In one of the chapters, and I like the way your chapters are titled based on a part of a bicycle and also an attribute like gears, pacing, you talk about living your life kind of in a rush sometimes, in a fast speed. And as your friend Abby said, sort of an attitude that if it's difficult, push harder. So I'm wondering how riding a bicycle has changed that maybe? And also, does it matter if you're riding a single speed bike or one with 20 gears?
And for those of you who maybe just tuned in, you're listening to the KBOO Bike Show here on KBOO FM Portland, and we are speaking with Laura Everett, author of the just-published book, Holy Spokes, The Search for Urban Spirituality on Two Wheels. Go ahead, Laura.
Thank you. Right, so each chapter is a different part of the bicycle, and with a related, what I'm calling an urban spiritual practice. And that chapter on gears is about pacing, learning how to pace. I once had a therapist who said to me, Laura, it seems like you've only got two speeds, on and off. And it's true, my first bike was a single speed. If I came to a hill, I went up it as fast as I could and then sort of petered out on the top. I didn't really have a sense of pacing. And unfortunately, that's been true for my life, that go harder, go faster is really encouraged, I think, culturally. And learning to shift, not grind, mm-hmm. has been as true on my bicycle as it is in my life. When can I just shift and make life a little easier for myself?
Yeah, there's something to that flexibility, huh?
Right, and I also, one of my favorite, I know they get a bad rap, but one of my favorite activities is riding behind one of the older male cyclists who's been riding the roads of Boston before there was ever a bike lane in sight. Mm-hmm. And man, those guys, they just ride at their own pace. They're not racing, they're not rushing the lights, they know exactly how long it's going to take, and they model for me a kind of clarity about riding your own ride, mm-hmm. regardless of what's happening around you. I think that's a real wisdom that comes with age and experience.
And you, I think, you talk about retro grumps or Freds, or and also connect them with John the Baptist, but hopefully without losing their heads.
That's right. Oh, come on. You know, like burlap and wool, they're both natural fibers.
Worn by John the Baptist also, sort of, at least, you know, according to Hollywood films. You also, the book is so rich with, you know, reflections, ideas, and I also liked the rituals you contain. At the end, you have blessing for the bicycle service and also a ceremony for ghost bike riders. Can you talk a little bit about what's involved in those rituals?
Well, I'm honored that friends and cyclists entrust me to share our common practice in things like a blessing of the bicycles and a ghost bike ceremony. So ghost bikes, for those who maybe have not seen them, are white bicycles that are placed at a location of a crash. They started in the early 2000s in St. Louis and expanded from there. And at least in Boston for a season, the ghost bikes were put up under cover of night. And we'd sort of wait until the city took them down. But things have changed some, and relationships are better. And now there's a small group of us, essentially a ghost bike funeral guild, that gathers together, prepares a ghost bike, installs it. Some people work with the police, others work with the press, some bring the candles, and my job is to lead the ceremony. And you know, I went to seminary. I've been a pastor for a number of years now, and no prayer book that I own has any order of service for how to dedicate a ghost bike. And so it's something we had to build and learn together and create for a community that's really religiously diverse. Mm-hmm. So what do you sing? How do you pray? How do you remember the dead when you have so many people from so many different backgrounds? And I included that resource in the back of the book because our roads are insufficiently safe, and unfortunately, people are still dying by transit violence. And until then, I think it's a moral responsibility to remember the dead. And cyclists do that with our ghost bikes.
And in the ceremony of blessing and joyfulness, I like the text also from the prophet Ezekiel, which is all about wheels and creatures darting in a flash of lightning, and it definitely sounds like a heavenly chariot or a bicycle, perhaps.
Well, that's right, and sometimes my Christian brethren forget this, but we're a people whose story starts in the garden but ends in a city. The heavenly vision in Scripture is urban. That New Jerusalem is a city. I like to imagine paved with dedicated bike lanes. Right, so we bless bicycles because they are tools of our everyday life, and I think what we do is holy. My experience of cyclists of every religion and no religion is that these are people who are often making a decision based on their deepest values. Values about sustainability, about community, about justice. How good is it to bless that and say, thank you. Thank you so much. Ride in peace and joy.
And I'm from Jerusalem, so I'm familiar with Jews and Arabs riding together, Palestinians and Israelis. Not enough, unfortunately, but there are movements that bring riders of different religions and political bents also. I wanted to ask you also, you quote quite often from Brother Lawrence, who is not a person who rode in the Tour de France, but a 17th century monk. Can you talk a little bit about his vision and how that informs your own cycling and living?
Right. Oh, thank you. Well, so Brother Lawrence, right, he is a 17th century French monk. He was looking out at a barren tree one day and had this vision of the tree fully in bloom. And he went and lived in a monastery and wrote what has become one of the classics of Christian spirituality. And I turned to Brother Lawrence. I had read him many years ago because I needed someone to help me think about what we do daily and how it shapes us spiritually. Brother Lawrence is an advocate for a continual conversation with God. And that's what I started noticing on my bicycle. Brother Lawrence spent the majority of his life in the monastery kitchen peeling potatoes, and he invited me into a conversation about how what we do daily can shape us spiritually. And so he's a conversation partner for me in thinking about the spiritual effect of bicycles.
But your next book will not be about peeling potatoes?
No, I hope not. I have a part of the book, we didn't include it. We decided to keep it just about riding in Boston, but I had an amazing experience on riding in Tel Aviv on Shabbat. And maybe there's a travelogue of the great spiritual pilgrimage sites by bicycle that's up next.
That would be pretty amazing, actually. I would love that. And it would be a great excuse to go travel somewhere.
I think so.
Just saying. Well, it's been really, really great having you on the air with us today. If people want to find you or your book, where is the best way to get a hold of you by social networks or find your book?
Sure. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Rev Everett, and on Facebook, if you look up Laura Everett, that should find me. And my website is reveverett.com. I invite folks to go to bike to your favorite local bookstore and ask them to carry Holy Spokes. It's available also through Erdmann's website. That's Erdmanns. That's the publisher. So I'd love to connect and have some friends who are interested in hosting me in Portland. So maybe I'll make my way west.
Oh, that would be lovely. We would love to have you out here. And I'm sure you could, I can almost guaranteed probably be able to get a reading at Powell's if you worked it right.
Well, so. You guys are sort of the bicycle mecca for the rest of the country. So yes. I look upon you with envy.
Thank you. We have a long way to go. It's all, right. It's always a journey.
That's right. It's all a journey.
Thank you so much. And ride safely and joyfully.
Wonderful. Ride and joy, friends. Thank you so much.
You are listening to the KBOO Bike Show here on KBOO Portland FM on 90.7 FM. Stay with us for the second half of our show when we are joined by the women of Friends on Bikes, a new riding group creating their own space in bike culture. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the KBOO Bike Show here on 90.7 FM. Molly Sugar and Gretchel Faliskin are the founders of the new Portland cycling group Friends on Bikes, whose goals include wanting to ensure that women of color have a safe, supportive, and of course fun cycling community that they belong to, and to bring more exposure to women of color that aren't being heard in the cycling community. Word on the street is that they're making big changes by casting light on the underrepresented demographic of women of color on bikes. And I'm thrilled to have them join us on the show today. Molly Sugar and Gretchel Faliskin, welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah. So the first question that I really had for you guys is, can you explain what Friends on Bikes is? Because it's a ride, but it's also other things.
So we're basically a cycling group for women of color, and our goals are to, you know, encourage more women of color to get rad on bikes, basically, and bring exposure to other people of color who are doing really cool things in the cycling industry. Because right now there isn't a sort of a resource for that, and so it's really hard to find other people of color doing things right now.
Is there a resource for that in other places in the U.S. or just not in Portland?
We haven't really found one at anywhere, so.
That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen other groups like Black Girls Do Bike. There's even Mujeres here in Portland. But our group, we're trying to cast like a wide net for women of color and do a lot of different things. Rides, volunteer stuff, and just bringing the community together in a variety of ways.
Mm-hmm. And both of you are fairly new to the city, right? A couple of years. I'm wondering, you know, when what were some of your first impressions of Portland as far as class, race, gender, I mean, and also the cycling community? Because I think sometimes those, you know, when you live in a place, it's sort of easy to ignore some of the things. And when you come from the outside, you sometimes see things that are so clear, but we forget. So what were some of your first impressions of Portland?
So when I visited a few times before I moved here, and I really love that Portland had a bunch of awesome bike trails, bike paths, and it seems so very bike friendly, and so that's what drew me here. But once I moved here, I was shocked to see how white it was. People had always joked about it, and
Did you actually look at the demographics before you moved here?
You know, I had saw it, but I didn't really. I guess I didn't really
believe
it.
Because it's like 90. I think it's like 89% right now.
Yeah.
When I moved here, it was 96.
I don't know. I guess I didn't really believe it. You know, like I don't know.
If you're not from here, it's hard to believe.
Yeah. I lived and grew up in places that were like filled with people from all over the world, all over the place. So, yeah, it was eye opening.
Where are you from originally, both of you?
I'm from California originally. So,
yeah, and I grew up on the East Coast. I lived in New York for 5 years, and then I came here right afterwards.
So we're in California. Were you in a larger metropolitan area as well? So you were in a place that had a wide variety of people.
Yeah.
I'm from the suburbs of Chicago originally. And so, yeah, I'm white, but I came here and I was shocked.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I don't understand.
Right, yeah.
Well, it is interesting that, you know, Portland definitely has this reputation of being so progressive and liberal, and we are in many ways. But when you consider that, you know, into the 70s, the 1970s, which isn't that long ago, it was very, you know, there were areas of town where they would not rent to African Americans, never mind the police behavior towards people of color. That's an ongoing story. But, you know, it was almost impossible, and the town was very segregated.
Right.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you guys are both pretty new here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How did you know each other before coming here, or how did each of you get here? And if you don't mind saying your names just before you, just so our listeners know who's who.
Yeah, totally.
How did each of you get here, and how did you meet?
So this is Molly. I moved here by bike. So I biked here from Virginia to Oregon on the Trans Am Trail.
What?
And I did that last summer. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was awesome. It took 2.5 months. And funny story is, while I was in the Painted Hills in Mitchell, Oregon, I was staying at Spoken Hostel with Pat and Jale. They're amazing people. They knew that I was going to wind up in Portland afterwards. So that was sort of the end goal.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me to reach out to Velocult Bike Shop. So I did, and then Velocult, I found Grichel, and then I reached out to her because she's a designer and a cyclist, and she's also Asian. So I wanted to just get her advice about the community here and her experience. And then from there, we became close friends.
Grichel?
Yeah, this is Grichel. I moved here about 2.5 years ago. My husband and I drove our cars with our bikes, so we did not ride our bikes up here, but we came here with our bikes from San Francisco. That's how we moved here to
Utah. And then Molly got a hold of you.
Right, oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, and Molly reached out to me on Instagram, so yeah, that was pretty cool.
Molly, when you rode across country, what were some of your experiences, some of the highlights? Did you encounter any hostility? Were people mostly friendly to you?
Yeah, I was actually in a big group. So I was with Adventure Cycling's under 30 group.
Oh, okay.
And so I was with 13 other people. And being in a large group, I think the community sort of reacted differently. They were very kind. Yeah. We went through very small rural towns, mainly... very isolated roads to keep it safe. So the overall experience was overwhelmingly positive. Like I said, you know, I met Grichel through a reference from Spoken Hostel, and there are just like so many people that were like that. They opened up. We stayed in people's homes. We stayed in churches. It was a great experience.
That sounds amazing. So let's talk a little bit about a little more about what Friends on Bikes is doing. You've had some rides. Can you tell us a little bit about what rides you've already had and what are coming up?
Yeah, we've had a couple of beginner-friendly rides. Our first one was our donut ride, which was pretty cool.
Delicious.
Yeah, it was so awesome.
How many people showed up for that one?
There were 27 of us total.
Wow.
Which we were pretty blown away by. So that was pretty cool. Oh, sorry. And we just did a Kelly Point ride on Sunday. And we've also done a Forest Park ride. And so we're trying to do like a variety of rides, like beginner friendly and then more like adventurous type off-road rides. Our next ride coming up will be with Cyclofemme, which Molly will be leading because I'll be out of town.
And for our listeners who don't know, Molly, can you tell them a little bit about what Cyclofemme is?
Yeah, so Cyclofemme, it's a global day for women who ride bikes. So we're going to be riding with Cyclofemme PDX, and we're going to be starting at Isla Bikes in Southeast, and we'll be riding down the Esplanade and then going to the Riverview Cemetery and kind of doing a loop. But it should be a really fun event. I saw photos from last year and it looked like a huge group. And
yeah, it's a big thing. I mean, there's usually about 8 rides happening.
Yeah.
And we've had Sarai Snyder, who is the founder of Cyclofemme, on the show before. I just wanted to remind everybody what that was. But you don't have just rides. That's not what Friends on Bikes is about. You have this multiple prong approach that also includes community awareness and advocacy. How do each of these areas manifest for Friends on Bikes?
For the community aspect, we sort of want to be a resource for women of color who have questions about what shops to go to, if they're interested in doing more competitive racing, what teams to go to. So we want to be like this sort of approachable group for women of color to start at, and then we can direct them to, you know, other places that we feel like that could meet their needs. And then for reaching to nonprofits, we worked with Bikes for Humanity on PAL, and I created a zine on my Biking Across America experience, and we donated part of the proceeds to them. So we met our goal of $500, and we donated the money to them.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And why did you choose them?
Well, it's actually close to my home.
Oh, okay.
It's very accessible. And then we know that they're going through changes right now. They're partnering with Breaking Cycles. They're renovating their space. So we thought that could use the money.
Yeah.
And do you want to reach out to girls, young girls, or at the school, or is that not at this point?
Yeah, we're still taking it one step at a time. We haven't really gotten there yet. We do have stuff in the works that we want to do, but we're still figuring that out.
Grishelle, what about the awareness part of your mission?
So part of it, we are, I think as we mentioned, we're, you know, creating this resource. And so we want to interview other women of color who are doing interesting things. So creating that awareness that like women of color do bike and they do like are doing awesome things. Because like we mentioned earlier, there isn't that resource right now where you can find that,
and it's not something you see in, you see it a little bit in like Bicycling Magazine, but it's, and they're getting better, they're definitely making effort to do that, but it's there's not a ton it's just not something that's very visible.
Exactly. And so we want to create that. That's what we're working on.
Molly?
We want people to think of Friends on Bikes as just the go-to place if they have questions and want to see other inspiring folk like cycling.
So is anyone welcome to join in the work you're doing? Of course, you've created a ride for women of color, but are there ways that allies can support this important community, hopefully without getting in the way? Because I think, like, I'm super interested in what you're doing, and it sounds really fun, but I don't want to say this white girl is going to invite herself to your rides.
Yeah. So one of the best things our allies can do is just to spread the word about Friends on Bikes. And, all women are welcomed as long as, you know, they align with our values, you know, and, like, and support the idea of women of color riding bikes, like, most importantly. Like, yeah.
So anyone who's female identified,
right,
mm-hmm, is welcome.
Yeah. No dudes, sorry.
No dudes. And what about for some of your advocacy? Mm-hmm. Is there things that women who are white can do to help advocate?
I think, like we said, like, we're open to all women joining us, whether it's volunteering or going on our rides. I think that's why we named it Friends on Bikes, because, you know, we want it to be, you know, a community, and, like, we want to help each other out. So, again, just all women are welcome. But we just want to emphasize that women of color, particularly, we want them to come out to our events.
In addition to riders, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about maybe sort of bicycle leadership in town. If you look at, the mainstream organizations or City Hall, do you get a sense that in those organizations and places, women are represented, or women of color?
During our donut ride, we had a woman from the Street Trust who was actually, mm-hmm, a woman of color join us, and that was awesome. So, you know, and I've looked at their website, and it looks like they have value diversity, mm-hmm, like we do. So,
well, I think what's interesting is through a lot of studies, they've found if you're going to find women and women of color in the bike industry, it's going to be in advocacy.
Yeah.
What about in bike shops? I had to correct my brother-in-law is a service manager of one of the largest Trek shops in the U.S. It's in the suburbs of Chicago, and he was making a call out because they need to hire a new mechanic, and said, if anybody has some good references, I'm willing to talk to him.
Oh.
And I was like, and what's funny is I was like, or her, and then, mm-hmm, my sister, who we have a habit of not always getting along, but there are a few things we agree on. She's like, I was about to say the same thing. Mm-hmm. You just don't see it very often.
Yeah.
And I'm a product designer at Ride with GPS in town.
Oh, nice.
So, even though they're a small company, I'm one of two women. And, unfortunately, you know, that is a trend with whether you're a mechanic or you're just in the industry itself.
Yeah. So can you, for our listeners who aren't familiar with Ride with GPS, I love it. Can you tell them a little bit more about what it is?
Yeah. So it's a tool to plan your routes or your bike adventures, and also to record your rides. And we have both a web app and a mobile app.
Yeah. And it's really handy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to use. And it doesn't eat your battery.
Yes. And we're in town.
Yeah. And they're Portland-based.
Right.
You said, you know, one step at a time, one wheel at a time. But I am wondering if you have an idea, you know, 5 years ahead, 10 years ahead.
Have you thought out that far?
Yeah.
You know, I know next year we definitely want to do more workshops, mm-hmm, and possibly hold more, like, ride clinics. So those are goals for sure.
Yeah, and we sort of want it to grow organically, especially with the rides. We had high ambitions to do a variety of, like, gravel rides, off-roading. And we've come to realize, you know, a lot of the women who have been going to our rides are beginners, or they just commute, or they haven't ridden the season yet. So we're trying to be flexible with that. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to force anything. So I think we want to, like, hear back from the community and go from there.
Of what's needed.
Right.
Also, exactly. There's only two of you running an organization. There's only so many rides that, mm-hmm, I don't want to see either of you burn out.
Yeah.
Because this is such a great organization and a great idea.
And then in the future, it would be awesome. I think the 10-year goal, if we are there still, is to have women to create their own rides.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. We love how Black Girls Do Bike. They have different chapters in other cities. Mm-hmm. And that would be awesome if we had other women step up within Portland and then in other cities of their own.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I would. I know there's it's just a need for this across the United. And I think there are some, like you said, there are some other groups, but they're maybe a little bit narrower, or I think of like the Ovarian Psychos down in California. Yeah. They're awesome, but they're not so everybody's awesome. Wanting to do so much advocacy. Maybe they just want to ride bikes. And that's what I love that you started with just friends and donuts, because nobody can, it's hard to argue with friends and donuts. And in Portland, you can get gluten-free donuts.
Yeah.
You can
get
vegan donuts.
Exactly.
There's no stopping donuts unless you're not eating sugar.
Right.
And, you can't really get around that.
I'm always interested in what came before us. So in my research about early cycling in Portland, I actually did come across mention of African-American women in the 20s and 30s that rode bicycles. There were attempts to create even a bicycle club. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're interested in that, but it's, to me, it's always good to know, you know, that there were people ahead of us, or, you know, we were part of that big chain. So
we're actually always looking for that kind of information.
I'll be happy to share it with you.
So yeah, that'd be awesome.
Another thing that might be a fun ride to do that I was just remembering, I think about 10, maybe 12 years ago, there's a woman here named Kim Fay who wrote a thing called the Portland Radical Bike Tour, and it was a zine and audio tour of Portland and all the radical beginnings of Portland, which
that's awesome.
Part of the fight for, you know, an 8-hour workday mainly happened here, and there was a lot more crazy things than you'd think. But you can get it from the library
cool.
then do a self tour or
do that as a bike ride.
Just a suggestion.
Because
I've been wanting to read. I'm only suggesting, it's my own greedy. I'm like, I want to go and do it again because it's been a while. And May Day has reminded me of the need for for rights for people. So if our listeners want to know more or follow you or find out more about rides, where should they go?
So we're on all the social stuff under Friends on Bikes, but we primarily use Instagram and Facebook at Friends on Bikes.
Okay, so not so much Twitter.
I just don't know how to use it.
Yeah,
that's fine. No.
Neither do I.
we do. I mean, I do update stuff there too, but primarily it's Instagram and Facebook because it's just easier.
It's also the president's favorite means of communication, so that's one good reason not to use it.
Your website also mentions a store. It doesn't, I don't think, have a lot in it right now, but...
Yeah, it had our the Bike Across America zine, and people were able to purchase it on there, and now that it's sold out... it's just an image. But
so are you planning on, well, then that leads to two questions. Are you planning on expanding the store at all in the future? And are you planning on reprinting the zine?
Well, the first one, we definitely want to create more things because we're both designers and we're both creative people. But whatever we make, we want to donate some of the proceeds, whether that be a nonprofit or an organization that promotes more diversity in cycling. We still want to, you know, give back to the community in that sense. And then reprinting the zine, probably not in the near future, but, you know, maybe after all the rides and all the other things we're trying to do.
And so that leads me to my next question. What are each of your riding goals this summer, both for Friends on Bikes and for yourself personally? Gretchen? Rachel, sorry.
To get back in shape, actually, I was in a car accident 2 weeks ago. Oh, I got hit by a car, so my shoulder is like,
It's not happy now.
It's not happy. So I've been off the bike for a while, and so I'm looking forward to like getting back in shape and getting ready for cyclocross season. So I'm hoping to spend the summer doing more, like just riding, spending like, you know, doing more long rides in the sunshine.
That thing we've been missing so much in our lives.
Yes.
And Molly, what about you?
I want to continue bike touring as much as I can. I kind of got hooked on it last summer.
Yeah, something about riding across the country, you might.
Yeah, just that little thing, doing it for 2.5 months. So I want to continue doing that. And also, we're hoping to do some overnight bike trips for friends on bikes.
Yeah. Do you have any ideas on where you might? Or?
Well, we want to keep it probably less than 100 miles and something accessible from Portland. We haven't figured out if we want to get a shuttle, but we want to make sure that everyone can get there and it's pretty easy.
So it's like accessible by either train or bus or transit or straight from Portland.
And there's so many options here.
There are. That's why I was like, do you have
one? Yeah. Oh, yeah. And also forgot to mention, we are planning a monthly social ride during the summer, like on I think every third Tuesday. So it's just going to be very casual, you know, ride around, maybe go to a park and like hang out, you know, and just enjoy the summer together.
Go to Overlook Park and watch a sunset.
Yes, exactly. Or Tabor. So that'll be our monthly social during the summer.
I like being social. Well, and it is all about friends on bikes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you both, Molly Sugar and Gretchel Falasken, for joining us on the show today. Again, they can be found on Instagram under Friends on Bikes or Facebook under Friends on Bikes if you want to find out more about the rides.
And also a speedy recovery with your shoulder. In this town, anywhere you throw a stone, you could hit a acupuncturist, any kind of form of healing. So I hope you're healing fast.
Yes, and that you get back in time for your cross season. Luckily, you have a couple months.
Yes. So.
You've been listening to the KBOO Bike Show, broadcast from Portland, Oregon, on the first Wednesday of every month. Podcasts are on iTunes, and all past episodes are generously archived at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. The Bike Show is also produced by Alon Robb and Terry Campbell. We'd like to thank our in-studio engineer, Tammy, without whom we'd be fumbling through the airwaves, and our web host, Chris Smith, and as well as our guest editor, Josh Hetrick. We'll be back next month with more news and views from the bike world. Until then, make it a great day, keep riding your bike, and keep cool out there, folks.
Joyride on my tandem, Huffy on a Huffy, don't I look so handsome? Bikes suffice, they so nice, like priceless. Working on my calves and triceps and biceps. Bike past the gas, stop the traffic lights. I get around, round without a driver's license. Hello, you walking? Farewell, I'm hopping. And I'm whipping through the city with a 40 and a 50 party popping on my Willy.
My mother tells me I should stop. Go and get a real job. That can't be the way that I roll.
Dear listeners, KBOO turns 50 next year, and we're having a great time planning all the special events, special programming, and other celebrations of our radical, revolutionary legacy. We will be highlighting important moments in KBOO history and would like your input. Please go to kboo.fm/OHSSurvey2017 to tell us your thoughts about your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Dear KBOO listeners, donate before our next membership drive starts and enter our sweepstakes. Grand prize is two benefactor passes to the 30th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, June 30th to July 4th. This four-day pass guarantees early entry, seating close to the front of the main stage, shade, food and drink coupons, and much more. First prize is gift certificates to Brighton Bush offering overnight accommodations, hydrotherapy, hot springs, and more at the Bright Bush Hot Springs in Detroit, Oregon. Second prize is a Portland Center Stage Flex Pass and dinner at Kale. To learn more about our sweepstakes, go to kboo.fm/2017 Spring Sweepstakes.
It's time for Jazz Lives on